This is going straight to the pool room.
How you going? That's right, man. It is NBA Australia. It is Thursday, March 21, 2019. It is our 250th episode. Can you believe it? It is absolutely bloody unreal, isn't it? I am your host, James Clements. I am a writer for Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet walking around money. And I'm here. Always in Larry Armour Studios, letting you know who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it. Of course, who does it better than Lonzo Ball in the NBA today? Wrapping up after every single day of NBA action while repping Straya just a little bit, mate. And we've done that for 250 bloody episodes. Can you believe it? I mean, I certainly can't. All right, so today's very special show is literally just myself and Australia's very own NBA player this year, Brooklyn Net, Long Island Net, Boomer, Mitch Creek. That's right, the Horsham Hammer himself is joining us here on the very special 250th episode of NBA Australia. So strap in. It's a great chat. We cover a whole bunch of ground, including him nearly getting pneumonia once he got to New York and dealing with the cold, dealing with being in the G League, how it felt to score his first NBA points, and a whole bunch of other great stuff. So it is amazing. It's a really fun chat. So strap in, enjoy, and thanks so much for listening to 250 episodes of NBA Australia. I'm absolutely stoked by all the support we've gotten. You are all dead set ledges in my books. Almost as legendary as the Horsham Hammer, Mitch Creek. So without further ado, let's just get stuck in, shall we? It's NBA Australia episode 250, a very special event, chatting to Mitch Creek. Let's go!
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, as promised, here we are. It's the 250th episode of NBA Australia, and we have a very, very special guest. It is Australia's own. It's the Horsham Hammer, Mitch Creek. How are you, Mitch?
I'm very good, mate. How are you?
I'm chilling, not illing. Speaking of chilling, how are you dealing with the whole US winter this year? I mean, it's a bit wild, right?
It has been ridiculous. I came over here and wasn't really aware what I was getting into. I'd never seen snow before. I'd never even dealt with something below zero. So when I spent time over here and realized just how bloody cold it was, it wasn't the most ideal place to kind of get up and train and play in and have to work in and every day. So I actually had a couple of I had a few little stints of having like early cases and signs of pneumonia. I had like fluid on my lungs and stuff, and the lining was like, it was bad. It was so cold and it was kind of really getting to me. So I had to start like really, really rugging up and buying thermals and wearing long sleeves all the time and skins. And I'm a little more adapted now, so I can say it's a little bit better, but for a period there, I was really struggling.
Holy shit, you nearly got pneumonia because it was that fucking cold. God damn.
Yeah, it was crazy. So for me, I'd just never been around that. Like, I'd always been in the summer and the warm weather, and, you know, I'd never seen, you know, minus on, you know, on the charts before. So seeing that every single day, and then the wind chills were crazy. You know, most days were sitting around like minus 10 on the temperature. So, wasn't really the most enjoyable weather to be outside in.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, in New York, I'd have the dog, and, you know, you've got the apartment, so the dog has to go outside to pee, and it's fucking like, you know, middle of January, it's colder in hell, and you're like, Jesus, man, I got to take this fucking dog out? And he's looking at me going, dude, I don't want to go outside. I'm like, I don't want to go outside either. What the fuck are we doing here? This is stupid. And you have to rug the dog up. You've got to rug up. And but you're right, though. I think when we moved to New York, it was like the first winter. It's just that, it's that first one, right, where you're like, oh, shit. I'm not at all prepared for this. I don't have any of like the gear. I don't have anything to wear. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So I feel like, but apart from the cold, how has this year been for you? It's got to have been fucking amazing, right? You've boomed, you've NBA'd, you know, you've been in the G League for a whole mess of time now. Like, has it felt like just like an absolute fucking watershed year for you?
Yeah, look, you know, honestly, like I didn't know what I was going to expect. I didn't know what to, you know, what was going to be dealt my way. I didn't know the boomers. I didn't know the NBA. I just knew G League. I had training camp and that was it. Like I went in and basically figured if I had any chance of getting anywhere and ticking the boxes I wanted to tick in my life and answering those questions to myself, I had to just go and dive myself in the deep end, take a risk on myself and back the effort that I knew I could put in. So, you know, going to training camp, it was basically, look, hey, you've got an opportunity to do this for an X amount of days. And, you know, that 6 to 8 weeks kind of went by. And after that, it was like, all right, we're in the G League season. That's it.
Yep.
And that was where my next 6 months were going to be. So as soon as it kind of came around, I told my agent and I told, you know, the coach and Lamanis, I was like, hey, look, I'm going to have to say no to Commonwealth Games. I'm going to have to say no to the qualifying windows. I'm going to have to say no to everything because I want to give it 100% chance. And anyone that knows me knows how much the, you know, the green and gold and the Boomers jersey and that badge and emblem means to me. You know, that for me is the epitome of my goal. But at the same time, you know, I wanted to be able to try and give myself the best chance to reach, you know, ultimately my goal in making the NBA, but more importantly, putting myself in a good position to actually make the Boomers team for World Cup and obviously the Olympics. So, look, you know, I came over and didn't know what the hell was going on. I didn't know where the bloody hell I was living. I had no idea how to use the fucking subway. Like, I didn't know anything about it. And then when you get here, you understand how far out chaotic it is.
Yep.
You know, the first snow day, it took a 30-minute commute, took 8 hours. like, and you just can't comprehend how much you don't move in a car for 8 hours over a 7 mile trek. Like you just don't move. Like,
yeah.
And you're waiting for snow plows to come and you're like, well, I had lunch plans and dinner plans and I had to cancel them both for the same reasons. I couldn't drive. I was better off walking in the snow and trenching it and hopefully not getting pneumonia. So I would have been a lot quicker and I sure as hell would have made my plans. So look, like you said, it's been crazy. I never thought in a million years I'd be able to play an actual NBA game. I never thought I'd be in the position to run alongside, you know, the guys in the Nets and play against some of the players I've played against. So to do that, like you said, and then obviously put on the green and gold and qualify first for World Cup is obviously an absolute prestigious honour and something that, you know, hopefully is the first of many.
Nice. I mean, to be fair, if you had gotten out in the car and walked, you might have fucking died. So who knows?
Yeah, I might have.
But at the same time, what was that period like, I guess, from – so you did Summer League with the Mavs, right?
Yeah, so I did Summer League with Utah the first year, Mavs the second year. Brooklyn had offered the chance to play with them, and I actually turned that down. We felt that, you know, the Mavs and who they had draft picks for and what positions were that were around there, that would give me a good chance at potentially a look in there or a two-way or whatever. Now, realistically, you know, we went away. We did okay. You know, I didn't, you know, play as well as I would have liked to. I was really happy with what I did and how I, you know, showcased myself and put my talents on display. And, you know, they had, you know, great things to say about me and everything else. And, you know, we kind of left that and it was like, all right, well, what's the next plan? Like, we don't really know what's going to happen. And then it was going over back to Germany and playing there in Würzburg and signing a contract there. And, you know, the drama that left with Adelaide and, you know, the people there. And, you know, it was a big chaotic whirlwind of emotions. And for me, everyone knows me and who I am and how I play and the passion I give and the loyalty I show to situations and intent of what I want to do in my life. And, you know, realistically, like, I didn't know where I was. If I farted, I didn't know if I was a burp or if it was a shit. Like, I just didn't know what was going on. So for me to actually kind of get there and sign a contract overseas, I was really excited. I was in a great opportunity with Würzburg, which I obviously still keep in contact with, and it's something down the line I'd like to, you know, look into again. But, you know, I basically signed a contract with Brooklyn in the hopes of, you know, maybe, just maybe, you know, I'll be able to really answer the question of, am I good enough to, you know, have someone say, yeah, you're an NBA player. And without just saying it, put that proof on a contract, and fortunately enough, we got that opportunity twice with two 10-days. And look, we still have plenty of time to go in the season. You know, my hopes and dreams still continue to grow every single day. The passion and the fire I have inside right now has been fucking lit, like it's just an absolute inferno. So I can't wait to finish up my time over here so I can get home and get training again, because I know what I need to do. I know the effort and what I need to work on and things like that. But at the same time, I know how close I am. So I'm absolutely chewing at the bit to get out there.
Yeah, dig it. Yeah, like that was a really good point that you made about the in-between bit about like the Europe and stuff. I can't imagine like what the, you know, as you said, like you didn't know what was going on, like the indecision and all that sort of stuff of like Europe. All right, cool. But fuck, I want to play in the NBA. Holy shit. And then it actually happens. It must've been just like an amazing like relief, right? To actually go, all right, now I got a fucking shot.
Yeah, and look, you know, I went from playing in the NBL and looking to re-sign with Adelaide to that not working out the way we wanted it to. And then it was like, okay, we signed in Germany. I'm literally packing up and selling my house off, all my belongings, moving it into storage to then get a call to say, Brooklyn have offered you an Exhibit 10 contract. You have a chance to potentially go over and see if you can tick away your goals. Because otherwise I would have gone to Germany. I'd be playing, you know, a game a week over an 8 to 9 month season, depending on finals. And then I'd come home for maybe a month or so and then go back to summer league this coming year. And that would have been my season. And that would have been fantastic. I love my time in Germany. I love the opportunities I had, and, you know, I would have been excited to do that. So to then have Brooklyn come and reach out, and then obviously with what happened back home, with, you know, just the little minor issues that I don't really want to get into with Adelaide, like that kind of made me realize how fortunate I am to have, you know, the team at Mogul Sports, you know, Marquise and Jai and Steven, those guys to work diligently, the NBL and the respect they showed me, Basketball Australia,
yeah,
you know, to get it all done and to get me over in Brooklyn. And, you know, the people I want to go home and, you know, shake hands with and give them a big hug are those exact people.
Yep.
Because, and evidently they gave me my dream. Without them and the help, it could have dragged on for longer. And ideally that's not what I wanted. So, look, I reached out with two hands and tried to grab it, and, you know, I held onto it for a little bit and grasped it. And yeah, look, I can't even put into words still. And it was, you know, a month ago now that it happened. It's still a hard thing to try and, I guess, materialize and put it into a physical form. It's a really weird feeling, but, you know, something I'll never forget for sure.
Nice. So have you thanked Rondé Hollis-Jefferson? Sweet, sweet Rondé over there for headbutting a Knicks player just so you could get on and take his free throws?
Yeah, well, that's the crazy thing. Obviously, a lot of people didn't realize. They just thought that Kenny Atkinson, our Brooklyn coach, was the one that picked me to shoot the free throws, but little did everyone know until afterwards when they decided they knew everything about basketball is they're like, oh, it was the opposing team's coach,
yep,
gets to pick the player. And I literally signed the 10-day, you know, 10 hours beforehand. So, you know, he's going, all right, let's pick the kid that's just sat there for 2.5 hours and done nothing. And freaking he's nervous out as all hell. And I spoke to a few people about it and they're like, how'd you feel? And I was like, I couldn't feel my fucking legs. I couldn't feel my hands. I was so nervous. I played it off, and I'm pretty sure Ed Davis walked past when he subbed me out and said, good luck, don't fuck it up. So I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is a nightmare. And the first time was short, and I was just super nervous. And I can't remember actually the first time if it was short or long, but I remember I clanked the first one. And then I just remember the whole crowd took a massive sigh, like, oh, like we wanted to make it. I made my second one, and, you know, they went nuts, and it was just one of those feelings. And to run back that, you know, off an NBA court knowing you just scored your official first point, you know, and all the boys on the bench were super, super pumped. And, you know, Kenny came over and shook my hand and gave me a hug. And he's like, you know, congratulations, you're officially an NBA player that scored an official NBA point. You know, never forget this moment.
Yeah.
That's some of the shit, you know, I'm a remember forever. And I'll remember the tone of the voice, the eerie noise in the background of the crowd. I remember Mr. Whammy on the other side of the court saying, great job, Creaky. And, you know, just the little things like that, I'll tell my kids and I'll be able to be proud about it. And that's for me, the most important thing about this whole journey.
I love that. I love Nets super fan, Mr. Whammy. He's about 147 years old and he's a fucking like absolute legit psycho. I love him so much.
Yeah, he sits there with his signs every single game. He writes a sign and, you know, him and his partner, and he stands behind the backboard and puts everyone off. And yeah, he's an absolute icon. So it's pretty cool.
Love it. So what do you like in terms of like, fitting in with the Nets basketball wise? I mean, how did you sort of feel like you went in those? Well, you actually got on the court for the four games, wasn't it? Across the stretch. So, like, do you feel like your game sort of fit in with the style of play that they had?
Yeah, look, I feel it did. I looked at, you know, someone like Rondé and watched all his clips, yeah, you know, from probably about the last 18 months. And it was kind of one of those things, like, I wanted to best prepare myself to have the opportunity to play any kind of time and know exactly where I have to be and what reads he's made, because he's obviously made a living now. And he's, you know, really solidified himself as a main player in that roster. So realistically, like I felt, you know, comfortable. I didn't feel out of my depth. I didn't feel like, you know, there was, you know, too much physicality or too much athleticism. Like I didn't feel that at all. So I could get to the rim. I could make reads. I could make cuts. And, you know, realistically, the G League guys are hungry guys, want to try and make it and prove a point and whatever else. And they're going at your neck every single night. Now, some of the NBA teams not always are in that mode. They've been there. They're locked in. They know it's good. Like,
yeah,
they sometimes take possessions off, and you look at it and you sometimes think, oh, maybe I could play out there. Realistically, I never thought I'd actually be out there running around to find out. But, you know, to be out there and to get up and down, and to, obviously I was so nervous. Like, if I got another chance now to have another 10-day or another 2-way or whatever it is with any other team, I know I'd feel a lot more comfortable being out there, because I know that I can compete and I know I can play. So, you know, it's one of those things, you just kind of get up and down and you go through the motions, and when it's your time and the ball's in your hands, you try and make conscious, precise, smart basketball decisions. And, you know, if they don't help, then you shoot the ball. If they help too much, you pass it to someone else and then they shoot the ball. Like, that's all basketball is. And if you shoot more points than the other team, then you win. And the more times you win, the more money you make. And the more money you make, the more opportunities other teams get to go, oh, he's actually pretty good. Like, he's with the Brooklyn team, and that's a bonus. So, you know, at the end of the day, it was about making simple basketball plays and just being myself. I wasn't trying to reinvent the wheel and become a three-point shooter and, you know, prove to everyone that, oh, I have to shoot 40% to play in the NBA. Like, this is a fucking lesson in, you don't have to listen to anyone and any of their bullshit remarks about what the fuck you have to do, because realistically, if you back yourself and you play your balls off, then you're going to get an opportunity at some point. And fortunately enough for me, you know, I got my opportunity. I made the most of it when it counted. And, you know, there's not many times in your life you get to say that, you know, I'm 100% truly fucking proud of myself, irregardless of what anyone thinks. Yeah. Now, everyone has proud moments in their life where they look back and they go, oh, well, that's fantastic. That's cool. That's great. You know, I was happy about this. But, like, I know how much time and effort and blood, sweat and tears and sacrifice I put into it. And I know how much that means to me and my close circle. And, you know, we enjoyed that moment. We still enjoy that moment. When I go home and I'm sinking 35,000 beers in that first night, I'm with my family and friends, we're all going to reminisce and enjoy it. The fact that my parents and my best mate got to be over there, and, you know, I got to FaceTime all my friends and family when I got told, and cried to all of them. And they're the moments I'm going to enjoy. And they're the moments that everyone needs to understand, it's worth it. It's worth the sacrifice. It's worth people saying that you're not good enough and you can't do it and you can't shoot and you're not athletic enough and, oh, you're this and that. Like, it's all keyboard warriors saying it, and it's all people that aren't in a position where you have to make those choices every single day to drag your ass out of bed, do the work, recover, go to sleep and eat, and do it all again.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it's a vicious circle, but at the end of the day, if you really apply yourself, you just never know where you can go. And yeah, I'm just fortunate enough to be in this situation today, talking about it, saying that I got to that top of that hill and I got to, you know, tick off one of my dreams. And now it's made me hungrier than ever to continue to tick it off over and over again.
Dig it. So in terms of like the highlights and stuff, I mean, playing in Boston, playing against Bangers Baines and having your family there is like, is that right up there? Is there one moment that sort of sticks out as like, holy shit, that was the moment? That like, was there a specific bucket that you scored or something that you did where you're like, yes, that's my fucking favorite thing I've done?
Honestly, not really. Like, I look at the whole thing and I just remember like walking in every day in the morning and doing workouts. Like, people don't see behind the scenes. So we don't just fly in with the team and stay in your fancy, you know, beautiful room and, you know, everything's catered to you and, you know, you don't just see that and we don't just go to the game and we don't just roll out and play. Like, we fly in at 1, 2 a.m. in the morning. We land in a city. We go and work out in the morning and us younger guys and us 10 days and two-way guys, we go and play 3-on-3, 2-on-2, 4-on-4, 5-on-5, whatever it is, one-on-one with coaches who have all played in the NBA, who are all bucket getters, who are all going at your neck. And then you play against guys coming back like Caris LeVert, Rondé's been coming back. You play against Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, like you're playing against all these guys that are literally absolute machines. And you go and compete against them for an hour and a half in whatever it is you have to do to get yourself ready to get your, you know, essentially we have a load that we have to hit every single day to try and maintain your physical abilities. And, you know, if the average load over the week is 3,000, you have to somehow get 3,000 units worth of work in on the court, off the court, whatever, with the trainers, with the staff. It's all monitored by special technology and there's no hiding. So, you know, Alan Crabb's coming back running 300-meter sprints on the court at 10 a.m. in the morning and then suiting up at night because he's not going to play a whole bunch. So people don't see all that. And then you go back to your hotel at lunchtime, you quickly eat maybe, and then you go and have a nap for 2 hours. You wake up, you go to the game, you play the game, you get back on a jet. Then you fly out again to the next city or the next game and you do the same thing the next day. And, you know, at the end of the day, people don't see what goes into it and what sacrifices are being made. So, yeah, like to just be out there and to, you know, to walk into TD Garden, to walk out and, you know, play against Giannis and, you know, to play against some of these guys, even a hoop against and train against and be around the coaches and the minds and the expertise and the analytics and the NOAA shooting systems that they use, like it's just ridiculous. So as a whole, I enjoyed the whole, you know, I kind of try to encapsulate every single aspect of it and say, you know what, this is what's been great about it, the entire journey itself. But honestly, to pinpoint an actual thing, it would be impossible because there's so many moments. Every time I scored a point, every time I got a rebound, you know, seeing Giannis throw it out of bounds, you know, trying to defend him in the block three possessions in a row, to have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown coming at you down the court in transition and go at you four or five times, and you hear their coach, you know, Boston's coach say, you know, go at him like he's a rook, and, you know, go at him like you're sitting there and you're like slapping your legs like, come on, like bring it. Like, that's the kind of shit that's really cool. That's the kind of moments you enjoy, you know, shaking Bane's hand and him saying congratulations and, you know, you deserve this, like you earned it, enjoy it. Like, those little comments and conversations and then moments where you get to really look around at a timeout and see 20,000 people going absolutely mad and the mascot's dancing in the half court and you're on the bench and you're on the court. Like, it's so hard to really picture it, you know, without being there. But if you close your eyes and listen to that, you're like, holy shit, that would be a really cool feeling. I tell you what, it fucking is. So yeah, it's sweet.
With that in mind, how many Notorious B.I.G. Brooklyn jerseys have you kept?
So we get to keep one of every jersey we play in, full uniforms. The amount of people that have asked me for a pro bono complimentary gifting jersey has been absolutely ridiculous. And honestly, like, the more people that I'd never heard, I didn't hear from so many people for about, I'm going to say, the first time I announced that I was signing for my training camp, I heard from a lot of people, and obviously, you know, you get people reach out and stuff like that and say congrats and whatever. And the consistency of people that, you know, called every week, that text, that reached out, you know, hey, how are you going? Are you liking it? Like, not even asking how it is. Like, my friends just message me and say, are you okay? Like, are you having fun? You know, are you enjoying it? Are you healthy? Like, you know, are you in a good place mentally? They're the people that, you know, I really respect and appreciate. But then you obviously hear the other side of it where you get people that try and pop up out of nowhere and, oh, hey, you know, can you help with this? Can you help with that? And it's like, you know, I'm not that kind of person nowadays where, you know, I'm not going to reach back and be like, yeah, like I can get you a jersey, no worries. I've had thousands of people actually ask me, can you get me a jersey? Yes, I can get you a jersey. Am I going to? No, because if I do it for you, like, I got my family and my close friends all jerseys and I'm signing every single one of them and I'll give it to them. But those are the people that have been there, that have been on those 2 a.m., 3 a.m. calls back home, 5 a.m. calls back in Australia, staying up because I've been, you know, going through a hard time or whatever it might be. Like, just because I got my 10 days and I got my training camp and whatever else doesn't mean I haven't been emotional. I haven't gone through it and I haven't been able to sleep and haven't been able to eat. And I've been so tired and fatigued that I cramp all day and all night. And, you know, coming out with, you know, roll an ankle tonight, get a corky tomorrow, you know, tweak a hammy, you know, tweak a quad, and then you got to go out and do it again, and then play 5 games in 7 days and play 4 nights in a row and then travel like all hours of the night. Like, it's tough and it's a grind. And I don't like to use the word grind because it's my job and I love it to death and I love the challenge mentally and physically. But at the same time, people seem to forget that this isn't a glitz and glam, you know, I'm making hundreds of millions of dollars or $1 million a year. I'm not even making half that. Like, if you're aware and intelligent enough to do your research, you figure out how much we make because it's all public. Yep. So we're not doing it for the money. We're doing it for the opportunity to just prove to ourselves that we deserve it. And I'm not out here to prove anyone wrong, to prove anyone right. I'm doing it out here because I put in the fucking hours and I put in the time and the effort to be a professional athlete at the highest possible level. And that's my only job, is to try and reach and achieve my dream and my goal every single day. And it's to prove myself right and to make my family proud. So that's all I've tried to take out of this whole experience.
Dig it. Did anyone on the Nets, like any of the teammates or anything, give you any good advice that you're sort of like, oh shit, yeah, thanks, man? Or like anyone sort of like help you on your way? As you mentioned, Ed Davis walking past going, don't fuck it up. was there any other sort of advice that you got from those guys?
Yeah, look, you know, a lot of the guys have come over. D-Lo's been really good. You know, Rondé's been great. A bunch of the guys, honestly, have been really good. You know, they reach out and they talk to you and you'll be in a situation and they'll be like, hey, like, look at this, try it this way. If you look at this, you know, they've obviously been there and played a lot of games. And, you know, I listen and try and absorb as much information as possible. But at the same time, a lot of these guys are young and, you know, they are my age and younger. And I'm kind of, you know, they might be a second year professional like Jared Allen, for instance. And, you know, he was very receptive of me and he, you know, a lot of the guys listened to what I had to say. And it wasn't like I was just standing there making up numbers. I could give feedback and, you know, they could be like, oh, wow, like, hey, appreciate that. That's really cool. And, and then they would reach out and they would see a situation that they know I haven't been in before and they've been there time and time again. You know, there was a lot of good information that kind of sunk in and hit home. But a lot of the guys were just mainly saying, you know, towards the end of it, my 10-day, and then when I got my second 10-day, they're like, you really deserve this. Like, cool. Not just because of your attitude, but because of, you know, your talent as a basketballer. So to hear that is a really cool feeling, that other, you know, men, you know, see what you put in and appreciate what you put in. So yeah, to have those kind of encouraging words is a really nice feeling.
Nice. Who comes up with those bench celebrations on the Nets that you got to be a part of? Was it like, you know, was there like a choreography class at any point where you're like, oh fuck, I gotta learn all these steps?
Yeah, so obviously me and Theo were really close and you know, we had a lot of time and respect for each other, and it was just one of those things, I guess. You're just kind of in the moment and you're doing some dumb shit and you're like, you know, it catches on and then all of a sudden you're jumping up and down. But that's it. Like, this is an infectious city. It's an infectious time to be alive and to be playing, you know, the beautiful game of basketball. And I respect it so much. So irregardless of it's Long Island or it's Brooklyn or it's the Horsham Hornets, doesn't matter. Like, for me, I'm going to be the same supportive person. I'm going to be just as excited for you having a career night than I am of me having a career night. And I genuinely like love that. And when that's the case, it's infectious for other people to join along and be a part of that. So the people that have got call ups from us this year have been myself and Taj McCall, two guys that consistently do that. Now, it's not always an easy thing to do. Sometimes it is hard. Sometimes I'm frustrated in my own play, or I didn't communicate at this level and I should have done this. And you get frustrated for yourself for a little minute, but yeah, you got to get back on that train of, hey, it's about the team, it's not about me. And when you really try to encapsulate that, you try and make it something that grows and festers and becomes, you know, if you don't do this, you look like a fucking idiot. And that's kind of what it's like. Like, with us in Long Island and also with us in Brooklyn, like, to be a part of that and me and Theo on the bench going crazy, then you got D'Lo and Shabazz and Damari going crazy as well, and Jared Dudley's kicking around his old legs and stuff. Like, it's pretty crazy. So, you know, but like you said, it's one of those things that kind of happens on the spot. We do some, you know, silly stuff we see on Instagram, and then it kind of catches on, and then, you know, we're all running around, jumping around like absolute kangaroo jacks. So, yeah, it's a pretty sweet moment to see you know, House of Highlights and NBA and stuff, kind of retweeting it and posting it, saying like, how cool is this? Like, you can see the love in Brooklyn. And it's true. All the guys care about each other and love each other to death and have a lot of time and respect for each other. So it's a really good place to play.
Yeah, having spent like 6 years going to Nets games as a season ticket holder and stuff and never seeing that happen on the bench prior to like this season, it's been fucking awesome. So it's really cool.
Yeah, no, it is.
And finally, I guess we'll wrap up. I mean, what are your goals for the rest of this season and heading into next year? Obviously, you've got the Southeast Melbourne. Is it Southeast Melbourne? Yeah, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix.
Yeah, Southeast Melbourne.
Yep. You've got that on the cards. Obviously, you know, what are the steps you have to take to maybe, you know, keep kicking around in the NBA and stuff? Like, what's the plan?
Realistically, it's about finishing out this season in the right manner. You know, first and foremost, it's Long Island. That's my main focus.
We've got playoffs coming up for Long Island, right? You're a number one seed.
Yes. So we're the number one seed at the moment. If we win two out of our next four games we have left of the entire season, we play two this weekend, two next weekend, which is the easiest our schedule is going to be. But if we win two out of the next four, we 100% lock in first place and we'll have home court advantage for four rounds of finals. There's three in your conference and then there's one between both conference champions.
Yep.
The first three games are obviously single game elimination. So it's literally we'd have home court for all three games. You lose, you're out, you win, you go through. Then it's best of three for the championship. That's my number one goal, right there and there. You know, we've done a great job to be first seed at the moment. We're on top. We've got a really good, healthy squad at the moment. We've got a great bunch of guys and well coached by Will Weaver and the rest of the coaching staff and staff here. So, you know, winning a championship is obviously the ultimate goal. We put ourselves in a position to be successful. Now it's about time to go out there and be successful. But after that, it's, you know, Brooklyn still have finals. You know, obviously I'd love to get on the end of the season roster with them or another 10-day with someone else. But that's secondary to what goes on here. So after that, it's about going back home to Adelaide. I'm going to decompress, go on a holiday, drink some cocktails, put my feet up, go to the gym, get some cryotherapy and relax and go and run my motorbike and drive my car and, you know, jump out of a plane and, you know, go and do something I haven't done for a while. Just go and relax and get some me time. You know, we've just played, well, I've played around 70 to 80 games, in total, including Boomers, Brooklyn, Long Island, and then any training camps and stuff that have gone on in between. I've done that in about 5.5 months. So, you know, it's been a hectic schedule, a lot of travel. So once I get my rest back home and be back into training, I'll be with my strength coach, Adam Murphy, back home and, you know, it'll be about getting the body 100% again. And then, yeah, it's just about trying to plan for the next step. You know, summer league comes around again. I want to try and put myself in a good position. And then after that, it's, you know, it's about time to, you know, try and make a decision on, you know, what happens next. Like if we get another opportunity over here, is it a full contract? Is it a two-way? Whatever that is. But like you said, the greatest option is my, you know, I guess, preferred place to be is definitely going to be Southeast Melbourne with Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell as the head coach. You know, I'm going to be in a fantastic position. We've got a great team. We're building a great culture, a great club already by everything I've seen and heard and speak about every single day with them. So, look, I'm excited. I'm in a really good position. I've got plans on plans on plans and they can change. But at the same time, I know home for me is going to be in Melbourne and I can't wait to get back there and get working with them. And I know they're just excited to get working with me because they want to see me in the NBA. So I know they'll do everything they can to try and help me out, get there. But right now it's about trying to get this championship first and then see what happens over here and then put the feet up.
Unreal. Well, best of luck, Mitch. That's unreal. And thanks heaps for being our guest on the 250th episode of NBA Australia. We reckon you're a fucking legend over here. The Horsham Hammer himself. That's unreal. Thanks, Mitch.
I appreciate the time, mate. Really do.
G'day, this is Joe Ingles, and you're listening to NBA Straya.
All right, how good was that? Thanks so much to Mitch Creek. What an absolute legend, a dead set legend. Hope that he absolutely smashes it for the rest of this season with the Long Island Nets and they win the G League Championship. Anyway, let's quickly smash some game previews. As mentioned yesterday, I'm in transit today, so there's no wraps or anything today and there's going to be no skit at the end. But just bear in mind, we always wrap every single game here at NBA Australia, so we'll wrap them up tomorrow from far north Queensland. Sure, so let's do the game previews.
Game previews.
Thanks, inadvertent Bane.
Not a problem. That was really fun talking to Mitch Creek, wasn't it?
You better believe it, pal. You better believe it. All right, let's do the Friday NBA games. We've got Minnesota visiting Charlotte. And Charlotte having just crapped the bed against the Sixers the other day. It's going to be an interesting one, all right? So Kemba versus big Karl Anthony Towns. I think I'll take Minnesota in that one. Just randomly, I just think they're kind of better than Charlotte. It's weird. Charlotte, what? They've lost 13 in the last 18 games? They suck. All right, Denver at Washington. Give me the Nuggets. They are a good basketball team. The Washington Wizards are not. It's pretty straightforward. Utah, the Jazz. It's a soft Y, so it's the Yaz. It's a soft J. Against the Atlanta Hawks, Kaká. Give me the Yaz. I think they should smash it. Watch Jinglin' Joe Ingles break some more ankles. What do you reckon? But yeah, the Yaz should smash the Atlanta Hawks. Detroit at Phoenix. Ugh. Who's going to watch this? Jesus.
I believe the phrase is nobody, bro. Nobody.
Give me the Pistons, though. They need to get back on track. Especially having crapped the bed randomly against Cleveland the other day. That's right, Stephen A. Smith. They crapped the bed against Cleveland. That's right. Give me the Pistons. Dallas, the Mavs on a back-to-back play in Sacramento. The Sacramento Kings having just given up an absolutely atrocious fourth quarter and losing the Nets on Wednesday. Hopefully should get back on track here. I mean, they're going to be playing for pride going, oh shit.
Yeah, maybe we should have drafted Luka Doncic. I don't know.
Marvy Bags will have a 30-point game. Don't worry about that. Give me the Kings. And then finally, Indy at Golden State. The Warriors should pretty much happily roll over the top of the Victor Oladipo less Indiana Pacers. Watch Tyreek Evans desperately throwing the ball up there, trying to get a contract for next year. Fill up the stat sheet, but the Warriors should absolutely roll. All right. There you go. There's all the game previews for tomorrow. And yeah, we'll smash up every single one of those. We'll wrap them up with the old NBA Australia Pro Performance of the Night. All the usual good stuff that you've come to love and know. Old Mate, No Mate, Spud of the Night, Pantsing in the Evening, and Better Than Lonzo Ball. That'll all be back tomorrow. Because, you know, 250th episode, we had to do something special. And Mitch Creek was pretty special. All right, we'll finish off right after. Let's say these ones.
This is David Anderson. You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, and that is it for today. That is our 250th episode. Thanks so much to Mitch Creek for joining us and being our special guest for episode 250. It was absolutely unreal chatting to him about all the stuff that we touched on. I hope you learn a bit about his journey and how much of a passion he's got for everything. And there's some pretty funny shit in there too, right? How good was that? Nothing else to this show today. We will be back tomorrow with all the wraps and all the usual dumbassery that you've come to know and love from NBA Australia. We're going to wrap all the games. We're going to have the Patty Mills Game Day, Baller Game Day, Twitter check-in, all that usual stuff. Even going to have an Andrew Bogut slams a bunch of Twitter snowflakes from Twitter, which should be amazing. All right, so make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll be all over the socials this weekend. Don't worry about that. Check us a rating and review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whoever you listen to us here at NBA Australia. Big thanks to the guys who have been there from day one from Oslo for the intro and outro song, but go check out their new band, House Hats. They have their debut album coming out March 29. It's being launched April 12 in Melbourne at the Old Bar. I will be there. It will be amazing. Also, as usual, huge thanks to Fascinator, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Jedi, Green, 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 Dozers. They are all amazing bands and acts. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp, Facey. Support them the way they support us here at NBA Australia. And if you're in a band, your mates are in a band, hit us up. We'll play them. And that is it. Thanks so much for 250 episodes of NBA Australia. It means so much that people listen to this, that interact with us, that give a crap. It's legitimately amazing. And here's to another 250 more. Love it. All right, that's it, you dickheads. 250 episodes in the bag. We'll talk to you tomorrow, you nongs. This is NBA Australia saying, later, hoes. My mind is weak.
say I don't agree with the part about me being horny all hours of the day. A few hours in the day, yes, but not all hours of the day. I digress.